This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Speaking of a wonderful world, it doesn't get any more wonderful than every Wednesday at 1 o'clock when we are joined by Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, moderator of the Cover 3 podcast, the best stop for you when you want to hear about college football, college sports. Chip Patterson is there. What's up, my friend?
Thank you very much for the ringing endorsement of the Cover 3 podcast. You know, we've been in draft season.
I know.
Just a lot of drafting, and so I feel like we're providing a unique opportunity for people to jump on board and get a feel for what we're up to.
All right, so real quick, because I can't talk about it because I have nothing about it, but you're drafting coaches as recruiters. Now, is this just head coaches, or are we drafting position coaches who also happen to be good recruiters? Because I follow recruiting like I do needlepoint, so which is to say I don't. So to explain to me what this is.
The coach draft is the brainchild of now Vanderbilt general manager Barton Simmons, formerly my co-host on the podcast.
Right.
6-round draft, and you have to fill out your roster with one head coach, one offensive coordinator, one defensive coordinator, and 3 wild card picks. Nick Saban was first overall pick. That's not a huge surprise, but we had a position coach go second because of some of the game theory involved. I mean, there's a lot of good head coaches. And so what's fun is that you can decide that you want to go with a recruiter, but you could also go with somebody who is more notable for their player development. You know, like some of the line coaches at Kentucky, for example, great play in the trenches under Mark Stoops. And so Mark Stoops didn't get picked, but one of his assistants did. A lot of Ohio State assistants went before Ryan Day did. So it's a little bit of fun within the context of the 6-round draft, fun within the context of building out a staff. And the fiction that we're playing is that we've drafted these teams with quarterbacks, pass catchers, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, running backs, and linebackers. So now we need coaches to lead them. And so that's what we've been doing over the last 2 weeks.
All right, so Chip Patterson is with us, as he is every Wednesday, Cover 3 podcast moderator, CBSSports.com. Because it leads me into the first thing I wanted to talk about anyway. So in this new era of NIL and collectives, how has the recruiting rankings, how has the recruiting prowess changed? Has it been altered significantly based on the new wild, wild west and south and east?
It is too early to tell for the 2023 cycle, but I can say that looking back at the 2022 cycle that just closed in February, not much. I mean, the notable, you know, Texas A&M and, you know, the allegations of what that collective was able to do to pull in what 24/7 Sports has deemed the highest rated recruiting class of all time. But Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. Like the players at the top are still the players at the top. The big jumps, I think, aren't necessarily even coming from the NIL-specific angles or the collective-specific angles. They're more about the coach hirings or the coach firings or where a coaching change has been made. For example, Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame was doing a very good job as one of the lead recruiters for Brian Kelly. Mm-hmm. Brian Kelly leaves to go to LSU, and guess what? Notre Dame's class didn't fall apart. In fact, it stayed strong, and Notre Dame's class in the coming year is very, very strong. I don't think that's an NIL-powered move. I think that says more about Marcus Freeman, says more about Al Washington, a great defensive line coach that he hired away from Ohio State, of Tommy Rees, the offensive coordinator, who reportedly turned down the opportunity to go be an offensive coordinator for Brian Kelly at LSU. And so it's more about, the staff that we have in place. For the most part, the schools that have always been good at recruiting have always had the best resources, and those schools that have the best resources are going to be able to activate the collectives and the NIL opportunities. I don't see it changing the landscape in a dramatic way. I entertained the idea maybe 2 years ago that NIL would have allowed for a big shakeup in the recruiting world. I have not seen that so far. And again, we are only about a cycle and a half
right.
through the process. But let's say even like the top quarterbacks in the upcoming recruiting class, you know, you think about the guys that would demand multi-million dollars potentially, or $1 million a year, or something like that. They are committed to, you know, Alabama. They are committed to Tennessee. They are committed to USC. I mean, they are still going to the same places that you might expect.
Although you just did say Tennessee, so we'll get to that in a minute.
I mean, they've got a very good collective.
Right, they do. Like, see, here's the way I look at the collectives. So we're going to have years where, you know, A&M has the top class or Tennessee, but we don't have to go back that far to see that the University of Mississippi had one of the top recruiting classes out of freaking nowhere. And that, of course, was, I mean, ended up being, they cheated. Now we don't have to cheat to do these things. We have brought all of that above board, which I'm in favor of, and I'm good with it. I hope out of nowhere, South Carolina. I just honestly just picked a school out of random. I hope a school like South Carolina, one year, boom, it all hits. The NIL collective comes forward, and all of a sudden, the Gamecocks have the best recruiting class. Let me throw this, because there's a couple of ways I want to go, but I want to get back to Marcus Freeman, because we have two Marcus Freeman issues here. One is Freeman versus his old boss, Brian Kelly, who's now at LSU. Right. And the other we'll get to in a second. I'll set it aside. But Freeman had some things to say about Ohio State, which he has since kind of retracted, but we can't unhear it. And truth is truth. But has Notre Dame, in a way, I don't mean to disparage Brian Kelly, but has Notre Dame, in a way, freed itself from Brian Kelly? And might this be the coach to take them even further?
I think Brian Kelly knew that. I think that Brian Kelly knew that Marcus Freeman was going to be able to lead Notre Dame into the next generation. My feeling is that when Marcus Freeman was hired to join Brian Kelly's staff, Jack Swarbrick, the athletic director, Brian Kelly, the head football coach, all kind of viewed him as a successor, which is why when Brian Kelly left for LSU and Notre Dame was caught a little bit off guard, Notre Dame could go to the open market. And I mean, they could have gone to talk to Luke Fickle. They could have gone to talk to, you know, some of the top coaches and in college or pro, because it is the Notre Dame Fighting Irish football program. But they stuck with the plan that I think that they initially envisioned was maybe a couple years away. But they stuck with the plan of having Marcus Freeman lead this group into the next generation. So, yes, without a doubt, I think that Brian Kelly would even say that based on his age, you know, based on his experience as a player and as a high level player, you mentioned Ohio State. I mean, he played at Ohio State. You know, he has that ability to connect with the modern player in a way that a lot of head coaches and certainly not Brian Kelly at this point in his career was able to do. So, you know, especially keeping Tommy Rees, you know, former Notre Dame quarterback, some of the staff hires that he's been able to make, he is reshaping the Notre Dame football program in terms of the way that he's able to go into rooms and the way he's able to recruit. And they just got Lloyd Carr's grandson to commit to Notre Dame. And I don't know if you saw it, but they got Lloyd Carr to put on a Notre Dame hat.
That is crazy.
What in the world? All the Bo Schembechlin that you want to do, there is no way I would have ever predicted. Yeah. We could have seen Lloyd Carr put on a Notre Dame hat, and that's what Marcus Freeman is. Like, he is truly changing the profile of what Notre Dame is when he goes in to sell it to high school prospects, and that is the number one way to close the gap, because Brian Kelly got so frustrated that he thought they did everything that they could do in 2012, in 2018, in 2020, he had teams that were playing at a high level. They were experienced. Mm-hmm. They won their games, and they got to the college football playoff, and they got pantsed by teams with better players.
Right.
Yeah. Again, 2012, it was in the national championship game against Alabama. In 2018, it was in the semifinal against Clemson. And in 2020, it was in the semifinal against Alabama. All three of those teams won the national championship and were the best team that season. There is nothing inherently disappointing about losing that game, But we all stood on the outside and was like, see, Notre Dame, they always trip over themselves. And Brian Kelly literally was purple in the face, like, their players are better.
Yeah.
I can't do anything about it. So to close the gap with the rest of college football, you got to get better players. And that's what Marcus Freeman's trying to do.
Look, by the way, you get all this stuff at the Cover 3 podcast. I mean, Chip's the best. All right, so more about Marcus Freeman. So he came out and said the other day about Ohio State, you just take some online classes, keep your appointments, boom, you got a program. I mean, I know he took it back, but I don't know that works. We already heard it, and it's probably not untrue what we know about Ohio State. As somebody who could have gone to Ohio State, they accepted me. We knew what it was all about. They make freshman year really hard, and then the rest of it is kind of a breeze. So certainly good. They weed everybody out, and then they just kind of make it easy for you. But what did that say? What are your thoughts on what Marcus Freeman had to say about Ohio State?
Do you or Joe Ovius have the copyrights on No Crap Exclusive?
Joe, that's Joe's. That's okay. Joe's, yeah.
Notre Dame is a more academically challenging university than Ohio State.
Yeah.
No Crap Exclusive. Ohio State is a not historically, but is operating at a higher level as a football program than Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
No Crap Exclusive. Like, it's just, they are so different. And I think that's what Marcus Freeman was pointing out, is he was like, look, what we are introducing to our players is a smaller university. Like, you are going to have mm-hmm. to go to some of these classes. The way that academics are valued all throughout your career is different than what it is at this massive university. I went to a massive university and I took a couple online classes, right?
Yeah.
It happened to work out. I was waiting tables, and also I was struggling a little bit academically. Some of the online classes helped, some of them hurt.
Yeah.
Sometimes I need that structure, but that's my problem. But I think that for Marcus Freeman to be pointing out that the academic rigors on a day-to-day basis are very different at Notre Dame than they are at a massive state school like Ohio State is just so plainly obvious. I didn't think it was that controversial.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. And sometimes the truth hurts. It hurt. I guess it hurt Ohio State, but I don't think it matters, and I don't think it really impacts negatively.
That's his alma mater. That's like he even said that in his clarifying statement. Marcus Freeman, as he walked it back, as he mentioned, he was like, I don't know why you think, you being the media, that I would disparage my alma mater. And I believe him when he says that,
right.
That he was calling it like he sees it and experienced it, and it's different than Notre Dame academically. Does not seem controversial to me.
Here's the thing about, I've always said this about, like Myron Roll. Remember, was it Myron Roll?
Who
Rhodes Scholar, now a doctor, like we were reintroduced to him during the pandemic when every news and sports outlet was having, hey, this guy played football at Florida State. Here's a guy, I think he came out of New Jersey. He's like from central New Jersey. And that's exactly the kind of player that would go to a Duke or a Stanford. You know, but Florida State wants great football players and they want smart players too. So, I do believe that doesn't make a difference where you go to school. If you're smart, it'll show. I mean, and if you're not, there are places you can go that will kind of help you out, keep you eligible, and keep you on the football field. But there's a lot of smart people everywhere. And Ohio State, I'm sure, has a lot of really smart football players. I just don't know them. All right, let me move on to one more thing before we take a break. Is Arch Manning going to commit, or did I miss it?
No, you didn't. You would listen.
When is this going to be over?
All the coaches want to have their top prospects, especially a quarterback on their board. They want to have this locked up before they turn their attention to the fall. You know who doesn't have any leverage? All of the coaches are recruiting Arch Manning, okay? Like, Alabama already took another quarterback in the 23 cycle and still had Arch on campus this past weekend had him posting up, taking the photos and all of the gear. Now, are things going to calm down once some of these official visits do end up wrapping up? Yes. Like you do have a limit on the number of officials that you can go to take, though unofficially he has been to Georgia 6 or 7 times. Unofficially he's been to Alabama 4 or 5 times. But once the official visit season sort of wraps up for Arch, then it may be a little bit further down your radar. But I mean, he can. I imagine that he is going to draw this thing out as long as he and Kupa want to, because they honestly can. And there are so few times, and there are so few times in the lifespan of an athlete, less now that we're sort of moving into the NIL era, but when you actually have leverage over a college football coach. And I think the Mannings probably know that from their extensive knowledge of the way football works. So they're taking their time right now, and they are enjoying the process. And I have no inkling. I've tapped into so many different potential avenues of information, including most recently somebody who's got a bay house, you know, down in like the bay of like on the Mississippi coast,
right?
Bay house near Cooper. To try and see if they know what's going on. And I got nothing there either. So I got no clue what it's going to be. If when we're sort of making bar bets, it's a Texas, it's a Georgia, it's an Alabama, you know, maybe Georgia, maybe Texas, kind of depends on, you know, where they end up deciding that Manning's going to be able to go and have the right combination of development, playing time, and access to the NFL.
Somebody should hire David Cutcliffe and just get this over with. All right, Chip. When we
go to the SEC, I commit to the SEC office.
When we come back, I want to ask you one more football thing, and then we got to do some U.S. Open picks. And as I mentioned earlier, no talk about that other tour. Okay, U.S. Okay. Open. We're not going to put a black cloud over what's going on at Brookline. Chip and I will talk about you. Exactly.
Doing this just for Brooks.
Just for Brooks Koepka. Next. Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible, because here's one thing, Adam. Taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they don't are familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for you your very own tax and retirement plan that will help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. I heard this last night. Robert Plant, Alison Krauss, Cocobooth Amphitheater. It was only about 86 when I think they took the stage. Actually, it probably wasn't that bad. It never got as hot as it could have been yesterday. I hope Chip Patterson stayed indoors yesterday. It was supposed to be 100, but it didn't get there. It got to like 93. Did you stay indoors yesterday?
So Monday after pickup, we did Play-Doh. And then Tuesday after pickup, we went to Wegmans to go do multiple passes by the train and the lobsters. So, like, if you see somebody ping-ponging with a 2-year-old between the train and the lobsters at the back of Wegmans, that's me.
Look, we used to go to pet stores and just let them look at the fish and like the lizards. That was a big deal. That was a big deal. That was entertainment, man. Anything you could do to kill 30 minutes was just everything you had.
Routinely, we go to the park. We're going on a walk. Like we are very, very outside for our post pickup pre dinner activities. And so when that's the hottest part of the day, and you got a heat advisory, got to get creative.
There's no question about it. All right, let me real quick, because you floated this, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but maybe we can explore it even more next week. Because you floated this out on a Cover 3 podcast, Chip Patterson, about, I'd say, 2, maybe 3 weeks ago. And I've always argued that it should be the case. What would the drafts be like? What would the next draft be like if the National Football League got rid of the 3-year rule where you had to be out of high school for 3 years? Is it possible? Like, if they just got rid of it entirely, it would be nuts. But even if they reduced it to 2 years, it would be crazy because you finish your redshirt freshman year and now you're eligible. What would the drafts be like?
I think that we would see a couple of first-round picks be true underclassmen every single season. And I think that number would get smaller across the second and third round. The idea of this being that the only players who would make that jump are the truly special ones, and those would be the ones that everyone would be fighting for. Those mm-hmm. would be the ones that everyone would be pining for. The other thing is I think it would be very positional specific. You just aren't going to have an NFL team draft an offensive lineman before they are more physically developed. Mm-hmm. Same thing on the defensive lineman. Because in the NFL, no one has the kind of runway or job security at the front office level that you do at the NBA. We can't do this NBA draft kind of projection and analysis where we are drafting you believing that 3 to 4 years you'll be hitting your peak. You just can't do that in the game of football. Right. So I think that it would be wide receivers, defensive backs, and quarterbacks, because almost every other position is so physically demanding that it is just not incentivized unless you are a very, very unique athlete for an NFL team to draft a 19 or a 20-year-old.
Adrian Peterson would have been a very high draft pick after his freshman year. Just like, you know.
Yes. We spent a lot of time talking on Ohio State. Maurice Claret could have gone pro.
No question. And actually, he challenged it.
But he tried to.
Didn't win. He's a very good advocate for college athletes right now. All right, let's get to the U.S. Open. And again, not mentioning that other tour because I'm going to respect Brooks Koepka and that the media is putting a black cloud. I would argue that they're not, but they're dealing with the news of the day. All right, so let's just open it up. Who you got, Chip?
Cam Smith. I would take a Scottie Scheffler too. But there's a couple things that are lining up for me. Number one, the absolute silliest reason.
Okay.
The silliest reason
I like that
is I'm looking for Thursday afternoon, number 10, Friday morning, number 1.
Okay.
I'm looking for the wave that is going to get Thursday afternoon, Friday morning. Okay. But not just that, your Thursday is going to be a little choppy because you start on 10, then you come back and 1 through 9, but when you approach it on Friday, you've gotten to see it in tournament conditions. You've taken all your notes. You've made your adjustments. You get to attack Friday first thing in the morning, 1 through 18, the same way you will on the weekend. So that is my very silly way to start off narrowing the entire field into just one of the four waves.
I'm not sure that's silly as much as it's sort of strategic. I don't know if that's silly.
Thursday afternoon, number 10, Friday morning, number 1. There is a group in that Thursday afternoon, number 10, that includes Brooks Koepka, Cam Smith, and Scottie Scheffler.
Oh, now, look at you.
I don't think Brooks is going to win it. I might take Brooks as a top 10 lock. You know, I might look at
it's a top 2 lock.
According to the history, sure. But
he's only gotten beaten by 4 players the last 4 U.S. Opens.
But I do wonder, you know, if he's got the goods to win it, I would not select that. But Cam Smith and Scottie Scheffler, now aside from the, you know, identify the wave, they continue to fall into the one thing that is very popular to talk about, but I still think important, which is what you can do around the green. When we have the second smallest greens in major championship history, like we will have at Brookline, I'm looking in my picks to find somebody that is going to be able to get scores when greens are missed. Scottie Scheffler doesn't have as much of a red flag as Cam Smith does when it comes to driving accuracy. As Cam Smith, boy, he can spray it. But I do think that the rest of his game on approach and around the greens and putting is sharp enough that, you know, he might take some big scores, but he'll also go and get you the birdies. Now, is again, it feels a little, talking about two of the top seven names on the odds board right now, talking about the two players that were going down the wire when it comes to the Masters, but the U.S. Open doesn't have bad winners. The U.S. Open frequently has golfers that are stars, that are studs, that are at the top of their game. I mean, you will get the Gary Woodland, which, by the way, like, played out of his mind, and Brooks Koepka was right there.
Yeah.
You will get Martin Keimer, who just ascended to a different transcendental plane at Pinehurst in 2014.
It's my least favorite U.S. Open ever. No offense to Martin Keimer, had nothing to do with him, but it was just non-competitive.
But all the other ones in the last decade have been like stud winners. And so right now, two of the best golfers in the world over the, from the beginning of the calendar year till now, Scottie Scheffler and Cam Smith have been absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And so either one of those two is kind of where I'm looking for the winner. The other, obviously, if Justin Thomas wins, I would not be surprised at all. He's been phenomenal. That's my friend Kyle Porter's pick. But, you know, there are the other ones that I think fit that good around the green profile. Joaquin Niemann.
I love Niemann. Love
around him. Around the green profile. Xander Schauffele, everyone's favorite at a U.S. Open, good around the green game. And we're not going to mention that other tour, but one of the most interesting names from that other tour is also a top five player on the PGA Tour. I guess he's kind of on the PGA Tour. He's sort a top five player in terms of around the green, and that would be Taylor Gooch. So those are all sort of fitting that profile of what can you do around the greens? Because with these small greens, I think you're going to have some game in order to win this thing.
Rory McIlroy around the greens is one of the best on the PGA Tour.
He's very good, yes.
And he showed that in Canada, nearly chipping in twice. I mean, he was just tremendous. He had that little hiccup kind of late on the back nine where all of a sudden he started missing short putts, which is always going to be there for Rory. I actually think that him getting over the hump, the first round hump at Southern Hills matters to getting off to a good start, I think, tomorrow, and he plays early. He's 10-1, but he plays early and late, which I guess he's early on Thursday, late on Friday. I don't know if it matters. Sometimes I think it does. Sometimes I'm not sure. But I like the fact that he plays I just like the fact that he's playing well. And I hate to be an apologist because I am I'm in the bag for Rory McIlroy.
We want him to snap the drought. Like, nothing would be cooler.
I want Rory McIlroy to win this. And if it's not him, I want it to be John Rahm. So, So those are the two guys I'm focusing on, but I've written down Colin Morikawa, who, I mean, off the tee, very, very accurate. You got to be in the fairways here. And he's a great iron player. He's not an amazing putter, but you don't have to be an amazing putter to win majors. You just have to put the balls in the right spot. And I like Schauffele too. And neither of those guys have had great years. So it's kind of like if they were having better years, their odds would be better, but maybe the value is even better. Morikawa's at plus 3,300 to win. I kind of like the value of that.
So where are you at with Jordan Spieth? Because he's a fascinating figure to look at in the context of this championship because he's, pretty good on approach, pretty good around the greens. Will spray it and put himself in some awful positions. But if you are looking at a course that you have to plot your way around.
Like him.
Okay.
I don't like him for that. Like Jordan, he can play well anywhere. So, I won't be surprised if Jordan Spieth has a chance to win. But if we're talking about, man, you got to be here, then you got to be here. You can't be there. I don't like Jordan Spieth because I don't like Jordan Spieth's chances to get out of there, right?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. So, like he gets there and then he's going to end up taking an eight because everything else is going to fall off the wheel.
Yeah. And look, the Open Championship when he made bogey from the driving range, notwithstanding, that was just phenomenal. But that was like at the height of the Jordan Spieth wizardry. And now Jordan Spieth is one of the best players, but he hasn't set himself as to be like a top five guy. So I don't like Jordan Spieth's chances, but again, I mean, he's a great player. But I'm going on board with Rory McIlroy to go back to back in terms of wins and get his fifth major. And I don't know what he's going to say after that because he's already ahead of that other guy. Two.
Give me a Justin Thomas Rory duel again.
Yeah, they're fun. I want John Rahm in there also. John is a great player, hasn't had a great year, but I look forward.
Have you played the audio of his response?
Yes. Okay. Response to what? Chip Patterson?
As Ali from No Laying Up said on Twitter, he said, this is the clip that'll go in the documentary.
Yes, I saw that.
When you want to hear what I think a lot of people who love golf think about the situation, I have seen from a wide range of personalities, public personalities who might not agree on lots of other stuff. John Rahm's take on this seems mm-hmm. to be unifying a lot of golf fans.
Look, I love Rahm. I love Wise playing. I love what his motivation is, and it's very similar to Rory. They're here to carve their names on mantles. Right. And that's what it's about. That's what it should be about. Chip Patterson, you're the best, my friend. Follow him on Twitter at Chip_Patterson. I think I got that right. I don't know. I just follow you. I don't even know what the particulars are. Cover 3 Podcast. Go check that out. You get cool stuff there. Sir, talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
Costa Rica scored in the third minute mm-hmm. of their World Cup qualifier in Qatar against New Zealand. I had them minus a goal and a half. They did not score the rest of the way. They won 1-0, so they accomplished their mission, but hosed me in the process.
How dare they?
United States in a mud bath.
Yeah.
Finished 1-1 with El Salvador, so that didn't work out well.
And yeah, Christian Pulisic actually tweeted out a photo of just his socks and cleats, I think, after the game. Or maybe post on Instagram. Yeah. Either way, just mud brown.
It's ridiculous.
I was like, well, those are all ruined.
So he'll get others, I'm sure. Anyway, I went 0-3 yesterday. Dennis did pick up a win, and he had a no contest because Juan Soto was not in the lineup for Washington, so that's no blood. So you're doing well. You're almost... You're inside of negative 1,500.
I am.
That is an accomplishment.
I'm over the last week and a half a plus 1,000.
Yep. If you got on board with Dennis at the right time, he might not be over 500, but you would be.
See, buy stock low.
I'm because I go for so many long odds. I hit on a few, so it looks great. I'm gonna live off the Jerry Kelly winning the that senior event outright for a while, but it's working. All right, let's make bets.
Place your bets. Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Yeah. Okay, you can owe me. I owe you nothing.
All right, where are you starting, sir?
All right, Tampa Bay. Give me Tampa Bay plus 135 over the Avalanche.
Tonight, just straight up game night.
Yep.
I like it. I actually like Colorado in the opener. But here's the thing. I've been wrong about that before, so I appreciate you going with the plus money. Lightning, plus 160 to win the series. I wrote this down yesterday. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do it yesterday, but I'm just doing it now. Plus 160 to win the series. Essentially, to me, this is going to come down to goaltending. Andre Vasilevsky versus whoever Colorado throws in goal. It doesn't matter if it's Darcy Kemper or Pavel Francouz. I'll take Andre Vasilevsky, plus 160, Tampa, to win the series. Give me that.
All right. I kind of like those odds, actually. I will go with, for my second bet, Juan Soto home run, plus 425. Give it to me.
Well, yesterday it was plus 600. Today it's plus 425,
Probably because he didn't play yesterday.
Oh, maybe. He's rested.
Exactly.
All right, good. Good for you. I appreciate you sticking with it, like you did with Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, it worked out well for
Eventually,
me.
It comes through. All right, let's because the U.S. Open starts tomorrow, Dennis. Let's throw some U.S. Open bets at you, shall we?
All right.
Give me John Rahm as your winner.
Oh, okay.
At plus 1,600.
Okay.
John Rahm as your winner at plus 1,600.
I'm also going to go U.S. Open.
Okay.
Will Zalatoris top 10 plus 330.
I like it. I like Zalatoris top 10 at plus 330. I'm going to go Corey Connors. I did it last week. I had Connors to top 10. Or top five, actually, at the Canadian Open. He ended up finishing seventh. But he almost didn't make the cut. So he rallied. Little backdoor top 10. Give me Corey Connors to top 10 at plus 375.
Okay.
Is that it? Did we do all of it?
That's all of them.
Can we throw I want to throw a bonus one.
I've got a bonus bet.
All right, give me a bonus one.
Oh, I got a bonus bet
in honor of a major. It's a major championship week.
All right, well, I'm going to go. I have to go.
By the way, who's our sponsor? We didn't have a sponsor today.
Oh, Peace Street Bridge.
Peace Street Bridge is the sponsor?
Yes.
By the way, when did that truck get dislodged?
I don't know.
Unless it's still there. It can't still be there.
Well, it's not because I actually drove through there yesterday at about 6:30 and it was gone.
Yeah, the truck was gone.
The truck was gone.
Gosh.
I kind of wish it was still there.
The shame of it all.
I kind of wish it
was still
there.
So, sponsored by the Peace Street Bridge.
Yep.
Claiming trucks. Claiming trucks since whenever.
I'm going to give you one more future bet here. Okay. As a bonus here. Zach Currier of the Water Dogs against the Chrome this weekend. Zach Currier.
Right.
Plus 145 for over 2.5 points. Lacrosse.
Do you think he'll deliver?
I think he will, actually.
Currier?
Yeah, Zach Currier. He's just one of the best all-around midfielders. Yes. Yeah. Yes, he will.
Okay.
Okay, now I got it.
All right. We got to do something in the hockey game tonight, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's pick an anytime goal scorer. JT Compher at plus 325 for the Avalanche.
Yeah.
Kind of like Brandon Hagel of the Lightning at plus 360 as well. Hmm. But we'll go JT Compher at plus 325. See how much fun we could have if this was legal in the state?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not breaking the law because people understand at this point that it's just units. None of this, I kind of wish that it was my own money since I'm plus like nearly 3,000.
Yeah, I'm glad it's not my money.
Like, see? Exactly. Dennis is the example of why you're glad it's not legal. I am the example of, dang it. We'd have half a year's worth of, I don't know, camp paid for already. So,
hey, how many soccer clinics and stuff could Jack go to with this?
We would have most of them paid for. Look, do we know if the House Judiciary Committee took it up yesterday?
I didn't figure that
out. We got to find out because it's a major story and it impacts everybody in our state who doesn't have access to the two casinos in Cherokee where you can wager. But we should all be able to pick up our phones and do something on it.
You mean the thing you can do when you just head across the state line into Virginia?
Exactly.
I'm going to be in Virginia this weekend.
There you go. You place a bet for us.
I could, actually.
In Virginia.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.